This week's parasha is Parashat Noah. And over the last number of years, last 8-9 years or so since we're saying this year, I think twice I've dealt with a parasha that I just love getting back to, and I'm going to go back to it today. The Tower of Babel. The parasha of the Tower of Babel, 9 psukim. And there's something that has frustrated me in the past, because there was one part of the shiur that I wanted to get to that I never got to. So I'm going to see if I put that part of the shiur first, then maybe I'll take care of that. Then I won't be so frustrated in years to come. First, let's read the text. The text is just a magnificent text, and it's going to be important in our understanding of what indeed is taking place here. You have the text in front of you on the first sheet. It's chapter 11, first line psukim, by Yehi Kol Haaretz Sofa Achat Udvarim Achadim. And the whole world, one language and similar ideas. Dvarim Achadim means that there was a unity, it seems, of purpose. I mean, if anything, this pasuk seems to be painting the picture of an idyllic situation on the face of this earth. A whole world, one for all for one, one language, unity of purpose. If it's not a foreign minister of some country, they did it. Yes, somebody's here. But we in Yerushalayim, anybody who listens to my tapes over the years should be able to know about all of the dignitaries who've been at the Laron or the King David. Why they always drive by at the beginning or the middle of the year, I don't know. But we can, yes, absolutely. Anti-Semitism, she said. And we can do without all of them. Very few of them come here. Yeah, that's right. What do they come here? What do they do? All they accomplish is a monumental traffic jam in Yerushalayim. Nobody's done anything good for us. Anyway, an idyllic world. Everybody speaks the same language. It's all for one and one for all. Vayihi Nasam Mikedem, and it came to place when they journeyed from the east. Vayimtzu Biko Beretz Shinar. In other words, it seems they're all coming from the east, and they found a valley in the land of Shinar. Vayeshu Sham, and they settled there. Vayamru Ishar Deyeyu, and they said one to his friend. It still sounds like everybody is full of friendship and happiness and goodness. They say to one another, Hava Nilban Olaveinim, let us make bricks, the Nisrifol Sreifa, and burn them in a kiln. The brick took the place of stone. And lime became the cement between the bricks. In other words, what's happening in this pasuk is we are being told of a tremendous technological advance. Man had already created the wheel, most probably, but now the great accomplishment is the brick. Up until that point in time, the only place where they could build, well, where there were stones, they would put stone on top of stone. It also meant that you couldn't build high-rise skyscrapers. You couldn't do that because it's difficult to pile heavy brick upon heavy brick, unless, of course, you have 600,000 Jewish slaves who are doing it for you. But over here, what happens is man, his back up against the wall, necessity, he invents the brick. No longer Evan, no longer the necessity of the stone, now they're going to use Levanim. In other words, little manageable bricks that anybody can put brick on top of brick, and you can build as far as you want. This great technological advance is now that which makes it possible to build any place in the world, even when they are in a valley where there are no big stones and rocks. And anybody can build. You don't have to be strong, you don't have to be tall, anybody can take brick and put upon brick. So here is the great technological advance. Interestingly enough, the Netziv in the Hamikdavar doesn't find the pasuk to be terribly important. He says, "Kol hamikra ein bo'inyan." This is not on your sheet. This I'm reading from my private stock. Kol hamikra ein bo'inyan. Who needs this pasuk? Why was it terribly important to us that now they have bricks instead of stones? What difference does it make to us if they built with stone or with wood, or they made bricks? I mean, I would imagine that if Torah didn't tell us about the invention of the wheel, why is it terribly important to tell us of the invention of the brick? I believe the Netziv, of course, is using this to really strengthen his own position as to what took place at the time. It says the whole importance of this pasuk is that we should know that there was a big kiln that was built in that valley. They were making bricks in order to build a big city. Big kiln. I don't know how many thousands of degrees. Why is it terribly important for us to know this? It's important because when we are told by our rabbis that because Avraham Avinu defied Nimrod and he was trying to convince mankind that there's a one and only God, our rabbis tell us that they threw him into a kibshan ha'esh, a furnace. So if you think that they put him into a little furnace or they built a special furnace for him, no, they had this massive industrial furnace, and into that he was thrown. When I said that the Netziv seems to be pushing his own idea, because the question that's going to come at the end of the parasha is, it seems these people are going to be punished. There's some kind of a sin that they did. Well, what was the sin? And what is the punishment? And there are going to be different approaches. We'll see some of those approaches. The Netziv says that their sin was, because on the face of it all, it seems all very innocent. Let's go another few psukim and you'll see how innocent it is. In Pasuk 3, they've invented the brick. In Pasuk 4, by Yomru, they said, "Hava, go to your left. Hava nivna lanu il, let us build a city umigdol with a tower of Rosh HaShamayim, with its head in the heavens. V'nasa lanu shem, it will make a name for us. Penof wutz al p'nei kol ha'aretz, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth." It's beginning to seem a little not too good, but really one can read the pasuk very innocent. People that want to stay together. People that stay together, I imagine, stay together. I don't know. And they pray together. Yeah. So they want to stay together. They don't want to be lost over the face of the whole earth. Here it is. They want to build a community with all of the community services that go with it. They want to be together. And they're afraid that they may be dispersed over the world. So we're going to build a city. We're going to build a city and we're going to build a tower. Yeah.
What made them think that they would be dispersed?
Well, I don't know. Because maybe they were beginning to find out that there's a big world out there. Because remember, they had already journeyed from the east. Where are they coming from? When the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat, someplace out there in Asia Minor, Turkey, or who knows where, that's where Noah and his children began to spread out. And now they journey from the east. That means they're beginning to see that the world is Sagresevelt. I mean, it will take many, many years before Columbus is going to cross the Atlantic and find out that there's another half to the belt. They don't even know that. So they're afraid that they'll be dispersed and they'll lose touch and contact with one another. So it would seem. Vayeged Hashem lirot et ha'ir, God went down to see the city Beth Hamigdol asher banu b'nei Adam and the tower that was built by the sons of man. Vayomer Hashem, and God said, here, first indication that something is wrong. And God comes down to see it. What is it that there's something here that interests him? There's something here that he sees may very well be a source of trouble in the future. So he goes down to see. Vayomer Hashem, God said, Hein Am Echad, V'Shafa Achat L'Kulam, one people, one language to all of them, V'Zeh Achilam La'asot, that's why they had begun doing this, V'Ato Now, Lo Yibotzer Mehem, if they are able to fulfill what it is that they want to do, they're going to be able to complete it, Lo Yibotzer Mehem, there's nothing to stop them. Kol Asher Yazmu La'asot, everything that they plan on doing. Hova Nerdor, now it seems that God finds this to be objectionable. We don't know yet why. Hover Nerda, let's go down. The Navlasham Svatam, we will confuse their languages. Ashalo Yishmu Ish Svatay Eyu, that one should not hear nor understand the language of his friend. Vayofetz Hashem El Tam Isham, and God dispersed them from there. Another precisely what they were afraid of is exactly what God does to them. Vayofetz Hashem El Tam, and God disperse them. Now go back to the right hand side of the page. Al Pnei Kol Haaretz, he dispersed them upon the face of the whole earth. Vayardu Liznot Ha'ir, and they stopped building the city. Al Chein Karoshimo Bavel, that's why they called the name of the place Bavel. Kisham Balal Hashem Svat Kol Haaretz, because their God confused the language of the whole earth. Umisham had pizza Hashem, and from their God dispersed them. Al Pnei Kol Haaretz, upon the face of the whole earth. So all of the Mepharshim, since the very beginning, want to know what was so bad about what they planned to do. What was so bad about it? Since I had mentioned the Netziv, so the Netziv's approach is what they were really doing was the first version. What was George Orwell? 1984. We still remember the time when 1984 was a long way off. We now remember a time when it was a long way back. What was happening over here was the creation of an elite that wanted to rule the world. Nimrod, king who wants to rule the world. We're talking about the first totalitarian dictatorship. No, we can't let people spread out all over the world. For that matter, we cannot permit ideas that are not politically correct. Avram is not politically correct. Therefore, do you know what we do with opposition to our ideas? Opposition to our ideas, into the furnace with them. So therefore the Netziv, and I would assume that the Netziv, because he lived in a Tsarist Russia, every one of them from here sees it from basically their own point of view, and they're all true. Living in Tsarist Russia, he knew exactly what a dictatorship was all about. And he sees this oneness, in other words, really the creation of human clones. Everybody has to think like, everybody has to dance to the same tune. There's one idea, and there's one leader, and there's a sense of great allegiance to Herr Nimrod. This is the frightening thing of the Migdal Babel. Because when he says, V'nasa lanu shame, that was one of the things they said, let's build a city. Now building a city may or may not be that bad, but when they say, let's build a city and make a name for ourselves also, already carries with it the idea that there's going to be one big brother who's watching everybody else. The loss of all freedom, and by spreading them out across the world, it gives man the ability to think for himself, to fend for himself, to be free from the totalitarian dictatorship that has been established by Nimrod. That's one of the approaches. Now let me point out one other thing about the parasha. You have the psukim coming after. Ela told Oshay, there's going to be an entire genealogy of the children of Noah. The fact is that before the beginning of this chapter, before Yud Aleph, there was another genealogy. Chapter 10, and I'm reading from my Chumash, Ela told of B'nai Noah, these are the generations of the children of Noah, Shem, Kham, Yafes, and they tell us the children of Shem, Ham, and Yafet. And from them we have many of the nations of the world. Gomer, Magog, Madai, Yavan, Tuval, Meshach, Tiras. This goes on for until the passage before chapter 11. We have all of the children of Noah. Genealogical table number 1. And of course, in the process of that genealogical table number 1, it says that Ham. Noah had 3 children, Shem, Ham, Yafet. Ham had 4 children, Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, Ukanan. And the children of Cush was Svav, Havila, Safta, Rama, Saftacha, Ubnei Rama, Shavot, Don, but Cush yolad et Nimrod. Cush gave birth to Nimrod, who heichel liyot gibor baretz. He began to be a mighty man in the land. So we have table 1, the children of Noah. Table 2, that begins immediately after the Tower of Babel, deals specifically with the children of Shem. Eleh Toldot Shem. Because from Shem, we're going to go the 10 generations that lead directly to Avram. I'm not going to ask you today to tell me right now, by heart, the 10 generations from Adam till Noah. Nor will I ask you today the 10 generations from Noah to Avram. No promise that I won't ask you next week. But it's worthwhile. You have to learn the 10 generations. Okay, next. Why is this important to me? I'll tell you why it's important to me. Because I want to learn a Malbim. I want to learn the Malbim. The Malbim is on the left-hand side of the page. It's not as formidable as it looks. I'm going to take you through the Malbim. And after the Malbim, I'm going to take you on to the back side of the page, which has a selection from the Kuzari. And then, if time will permit, we will attempt to tackle the Abarbanel. The Malbim. What does the Malbim say? Now, looking at the left-hand side of the room, we're going to do some reading. Second paragraph. Ulam mimasha kotzra ha-Torah velo pir shalom u'inyon dor ha-flogo ba'em etein. He is troubled by that which doesn't really trouble most of the Mepharshim. The Mepharshim are bothered. What was the sin of the generation of the Tower of Babel? What was their sin? It's not clearly stated in Torah, and therefore there are going to be many Mepharshim. Yes, there is the Nitziv who says that we're talking about a people who wanted to create a tyrannical dictatorial society. The Or HaChaim and others are going to say God's intent was for man to settle the earth, spread out upon the face of the earth. And therefore this was a frustration of God's grand design, that all men are going to gather at one spot on the face of this earth, and that's it. They're not going to settle the rest of the world. That was not God's original intention. And therefore he creates the circumstances whereby they're going to spread out upon the face of the earth. We will see one of the Mepharshim says that if all mankind is centered in one place, what will happen if, God forbid, there'll be an earthquake? And we're talking about all of mankind being swallowed up in destruction and devastation. God's plan was for man to spread out. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Lo Tohu Bara, L'Shevet Yitzchak, God did not create the world to be void and empty. L'Shevet Yitzchak, he wants it to be settled. And therefore here, they are doing something that may very well frustrate God's design. So God comes in and he makes a mid-course correction. And he points men out into the world, the great world out there. One of the more modern Mepharshim has a point. Says that the God was opposed to big cities. Big cities. Big cities breed anonymity.
Anonymity breeds crime and violence and filth and stench and disease. Men should be living out in the great open spaces where he can get up in the morning and fill his lungs with clean, fresh air. Cities pollute the heart, the mind, and the body. Big cities are destructive. Some cities have 8 million stories. I just dated myself. And then there are others that can have 1 million or 10 million. God didn't want big cities. He wanted people not only spread out on the face of this earth, but they should be able to enjoy the fullness and the beauty of the earth. So the Mepharshim, as a rule, are troubled, what was the sin? And therefore each one in turn explains what he thinks is the sin, and each one in some way tacks it on to a Pasuk over here. The Malbim is concerned about something else. The Malbim in the Avodah Mepharshim is concerned about, well, why didn't God tell us clearly what their sin was? At the beginning of the parasha, we had the sin of the generation of the flood. It's clearly spelled out. The world had become full of violence. Torah says it clearly. Dor HaFlaga, we have to go searching and hunting and probing in order to find out what the sin was. But why didn't the Torah tell it to us clearly? Of course, one could answer because everything that the Mepharshim say, all are true, and all may very well have been precisely what God wanted to avoid. It may very well have been, yes, a dictatorial society. It may very well have been men not spreading out upon the face of this earth. It may very well be God's opposition to big cities. Or as Rashi and other Mepharshim are going to tell us, that this was, in a sense, a defiance of God himself. There was something theological here as well. And there are all sorts of things. All sorts of things are taking place over here. But the Malbim wants to know, well, why didn't the Torah tell us clearly? So I say, one could answer that, well, maybe the Torah was vague because the Torah wanted to leave open the possibility of that all of these are true. But he's addressing himself first to that question. He's troubled by something else. This seems to be the introduction to the generations of shame that are going to come afterward. It seems as though this is the prologue to the dry genealogy that comes afterwards. Sheyida b'deishet hashkofa, at first glance it seems, shahar michud, v'chaye toloteyen, u'bizman shahulidu banim, u'bimei chayeyen, ein bo tzorech, kol kach el ha-todo v'hemuna. He's told by something else. What's so terribly important about knowing names and how many years people lived and who the son was and when he had a child, how old he was when he had his child? I mean, there's something missing here in the grandeur and beauty of the book of books. I mean, we usually read through this genealogy and we don't even remember what the 10 generations were. Why did Torah have to write it? It doesn't seem to be terribly important, says the Malbim. He begins his answer. Tir'eh achar acharei ha'iyun. You will see, after looking at this carefully, shehu yateiv gadol. This genealogy, this story of the Tower of Babel, and this genealogy is a pillar, a foundation, a stake of our faith. Would you ever have thought that a genealogy is so terribly important to our faith? Well, you're going to find out now. After looking at it clearly, you will see that it is a great foundation. This parasha makes clear to us the truth of chidush. Chidush means that the world was brought into being by an act of creation. Torah ha'elokid, and divine Torah, ayesodot ne'emanim v'kayamim, This parsha, this genealogy, the story of the Tower of Babel, is going to be great proof to faith and the truthfulness and veracity of Torah. If you need proof that Torah came from heaven, here it is. People are always looking for proofs of the existence of God. Was the world brought into being as an act of creation? It says, here is the proof. So many books have been written, countless books, the Chakirazot, about this question, Im Halishon Ot, Nut'u B'Bnei Adam B'Teva, language. Was language something that was implanted in man by nature? V'im Heim Ayudei Haskama, or could be language was a result of agreement amongst people. People created languages. How did they come into being? And there is a study, there's a whole area of knowledge that deals with the creation or the development or the emergence of languages. Is it something inborn, innate? Is it something that was the result of people deciding, Shekol Am Tiknu Lashon Latzman, every people made a language for themselves? The scholars are confused about it. They're not terribly sure. Eile mizeh ve'eile mizeh. There are those on this side of the intellectual divide, and those on the other side. The Moshe, Bavishnat Gimel Alaf in Tav Memchet. Along comes Moshe Rabbeinu in the year 3448. Torah is given in the year 3000. No, you mean Gimel Alaf? 2448. Of course, that's a mistake. You know how many times I've learned this moment and didn't notice the mistake? Torah was given in the year 2448. Vahudi Alanu, and he let us know, Ki Bishnat. This is 1,656. And so Moshe comes to the Jewish people and he gives them Torah. And he tells them that you should know, about 500 years ago, Nimhu Kompani Odom Pamadula, what is 800 years ago, he tells them a story. He has the Jewish people out in the desert and he gives them Torah and tells them a story that there was a time at which all people were erased from the face of this earth in a marble, in a flood. The Nishar Noah, and you know who remained after this? Noah and his three sons. Kulon Midabrin Svat Eva. And said, this is the story. Imagine, you're the Jewish people, and I'm Moshe. Well, just make a believe. And I'm telling you, as I give you the Torah, I'm telling you that a few hundred years ago, there was a marble, wiped out the whole world. The only ones who remained were Noah and his three children, and all of them spoke one language, Svat Eva, the language of Eva. And then Moshe goes on to tell them another story. Listen, my children, and I'm going to tell you another story. About 100 years after that, there was a generation of the Tower of Babel. V'acharei mea shona, b'dor Peleg, 100 years later in the generation of Peleg, nitchadshu ben b'nei odom shikim losha. You know, one day, people got up, and there were 70 languages on the face of this earth. Can you imagine? Remember, it's me, Moshe, telling you all about this. Pitom, suddenly, Al-Yudei Hashem v'Hashgachato, God and His divine providence. All of a sudden, people got up a few hundred years ago, and there were 70 languages. The Maudim says, Bazeh, with this Nashiv Tshuva Nitzachat L'chol Bilti Mamin. Here we have the winning argument against anybody who doesn't believe Divrei Torah, the words of Torah. What would happen if a person would come now and he would say, you should know, up until 500-600 years ago, everybody spoke English. And then one day, I don't know, in the 13th or the 14th century, people got up in the morning and, you know what? Russian and Hungarian and French, as Tutsuk and all were. what would we say to somebody who's going to tell us a story like that? How would we respond to him? We would take a look at the man and say, Arachmanis, the man is in serious need of serious help. What are you talking about? We have books, we have manuscripts, we know what took place in the world. We know. It's a lot. Can you imagine? Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Jewish people, and I'm telling you, they gave him a hard time. Jews were an extremely difficult people to lead. And God in advance tells, by the way, they still are. And God tells Moshe in advance, you have to accept upon yourself the leadership of the Jewish people, and you have to understand that they're a difficult people, and you're going to have to love them. And they made problems for Moshe every step of the way. They challenged him, they questioned him, they defied him, they rebelled against him. And of all things, he comes there with his story of what happened about 500-600 years ago, and 2-3 million people listened to the story, and not a word out of anybody. Not Korach, not Dosan Vaviham. Nobody gets up and says, Moshe, what kind of stories are you telling us? Up until 500 years ago, everybody spoke Lashon HaKodesh, and then miraculously all languages developed on the face of this earth. What are you talking about? Namaskai. Nobody questions him. Do you know why nobody questions him? It's very simple. Because it was absolutely true. And they knew it to be true. And he's going to explain how they knew it to be true. And do you know what happens when the Torah tells us this story? Right after the Torah tells us the story, the Torah tells us the genealogy year by year, so that it's very easy for us to make the calculation that it was only some 500-600 years before Moshe. The calculation is right here. So that nobody can come along and say, well, all the story of the languages on the face of this earth that happened 10,000 years ago, of course you wouldn't know anything about it. No! Everything is clearly outlined for you. We know exactly when it happened, or when Torah says that it happened. And 3 million people are listening to Moshe as he tells them this seemingly unbelievable, amazing story that sounds more like fiction than fact. And 3 million Jews stand at the foothills of Mount Sinai, and not a single one says, Moshe, you're kidding me? You know why? Because it was true. It was absolutely true. Watch. With this we have a winning argument against anybody who does not believe the words of Torah. If a person is going to come now, and he's going to say that 800 years ago, now the whole story, in other words, all the flesh of Noah really falls into this category. If somebody's going to come and say that 800 years ago, there was one man and three children. We're talking about one man and three children. What are you telling me stories? And this same man is going to tell us that 700 years ago there was only Lashon Echad Baretz, one language. Halo Yanu, Kichashu Alpana. They're going to answer him. They're going to lie. They're going to show him. They're going to show him gravestones from 700 years ago in other languages. You know what? They're able to show him writing from 3,000 years ago. What are you talking about? They're telling you 700 years ago, all the languages developed. And all sorts of other writings in all sorts of other tongues. I'll be able to prove to anybody who's going to tell me now that 700 years ago there was only one language, and 800 years ago there was only one father and three sons. I will be able to prove to him beyond any shadow of a doubt that he's a liar. I'll be able to prove to him all the graveyards of the world, all the people that were here, all the languages that were spoken. Now there's another thing. When Moshe comes to the Jewish people, he's not coming into some flea-bitten city on the Nile. He's coming into a civilization and an empire that is great, There are many intelligent and knowledgeable people there. He's not coming into some kind of a backwater place of people who can't read or write. וגם היו להם חכמים וסופרים כנות אבן, wise men, they are scholars. ומי יעוז לומר כדברים האלה על זמן קרוב כזה? Who would have the nerve to say a lie, say something like this about something that is relatively not far back in history? ולא זאת לבד. But more than that, אברהם היה בן נון חד כשמת נוח. כמו שכוסף הרב אברהם אבן עזר, the Eben Ezra says that Avram was 58 years old when Noah died. You know what that means? Avram and Noah inhabited the world at the same time. Huh? 10 generations apart, but remember, Noah lived hundreds of years. Noah and Avram, in other words, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that Noah invited Avram in for Kiddush after Shabbos, and Avram, davening on Shabbos, and he would tell the stories. Oh, Avram, Avramala, I have a story about the Teva. You won't believe the day that I didn't feed the lion on time. I'll never forget that. We're talking about people who knew each other and who saw each other. And how do we know that? Only because of this innocent, seemingly unimportant and insignificant genealogy. If you figure out the genealogy, then you know precisely that Avram knew Noah. V'ro'et Noah v'shem ve'eva. He saw Noah and Shem ve'eva. By the way, Yaakov is going to go learn in yeshiva when he flees from the Vareso. He's going to go learn the yeshiva Shem ve'eva. I'm sure there must have been an extremely important curriculum in the yeshiva of Shem ve'eva. But no doubt, no question about it, on, what was it, Yud Zayin Mar Cheshvan, on the anniversary of the beginning of the Mabul, I'm sure that Shem would speak to the whole yeshiva, and he would tell them stories of the flood. What are you talking about? Avram was able to hear from primary sources. V'chein Yaakov ro'et Shem, ve'et Eiver. Yaakov saw Shem and Eva, and he heard from eyewitnesses the truth of all of these words. And what do you think Yaakov Avinu told his children? What's the bedtime story? After the Shvatim were in their little their pajamas. So they would ask Tata Yaakov to tell them about the, when you learned by Shem to Eva, tell us about the stories of the Mabul and the generation of the flood. And Yaakov would say, I heard it directly. Oh, I remember when Shem told me that story. What a story. And Eva and Peleg and Usuruk, I knew them all. Avram is not only the great intellectual colossus who with his mind spans a whole world, he is also the living link between his children and his grandchildren who will come afterwards and the Noah who is before. He spans time. He is the cement that brings the generations together.
From Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all this testimony came to their children.
So Paro and Mitzrayim and Bnei Yisrael knew all of these stories. There was nothing new. I can imagine when Noah, when Moshe is telling the story of the Mabul and the Tower of Babel and all of that, you know, like somebody maybe, you know, like we heard this shiur before. We knew this already. I remember hearing it from Isaiah, who heard it from Yaakov. What do you tell me? Like, we know this.
וגם לפרו לכם צמביהם כאשר מתעמד אצלנו שהיו בעולם אלכסנדר מוקדן ושחיה כך וכך.
To them this was history that needed no further proof, just like to us. Nobody has to prove to us that there was an Alexander the Great and that Alexander the Great lived such and such number of years. History that is true takes on a life of its own. There are moments in history where attempts are made at revisionism, but you should know, Chazal told us very beautifully, Sheker ein lo raglayim. sheker, falsehood, has no feet. One of the first ones said beautifully, if you can imagine how a shin is written in a Sefer Torah, there are three arms or legs to the shin and they come together to a point at the bottom. Can't stand. A kuf is one straight line and another straight line. Can't stand. A resh is like this. Can't stand. Sheker, it has no feet. There are no feet to the word sheker. Emet, you have an aleph with two feet on solid ground. The mem has a long base. The tav has 2 feet. Emes, truth, has substance to it. And therefore truth will ultimately prevail. Sheker ein lo raglaim. Sheker has no feet. So therefore, yet there can be periods at which there will be a revision of history. Yes, there was a Holocaust, there wasn't a Holocaust. Nonsense. Ultimately, the truth of history takes on a life of its own. And anything that did indeed happen in history requires no proof. I don't mean proof that there was an Alexander the Great. You're not going to... Nobody's going to today ask the question, how do I know there was an Alexander the Great? What are you telling me stories? There was a First World War? It's the First World War, so my father told me about it. Okay. The Spanish-American War. Theodore Roosevelt. What did he do over there? His great acts of bravery. What was the mountain that he charged? San Juan Hill. Did he say anything like, don't shoot till you see the whites of their eyes? No, I'm getting that mixed up with the Revolutionary War. History has a life of its own, and this is terribly important. It's terribly important because we're going to see that this is the basis of the theology of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzri. Because Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is really the one who is going to establish this approach. You can't simply fool all the people all the time. We are an intelligent people, even though as of late one would question that. But we basically, certainly up until now, have been an extremely intelligent people. Now, we've been walking around for about 3,500 years saying that 3 million Jews were at the foothills of Sinai and they saw God come down upon the mountain and hear the voice of God booming out saying, I am God, your God. All right. So what are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me Sububamisis. By the way, it's true. I heard it from my Buddha, my Buddha heard it from her Buddha, and it goes all the way back to all the Buddhas that were standing in Hasina. Are we fools? Did our Zaydis and all the great of all generations simply pass on a big lie? They, you know, a few people got together in the desert, and they decided, listen, let's start telling our kids a story that there were 3 million people at the foothills of Sinai. You'll see them all buy it. Not so. Something can only persevere in history if it is a historical fact and needs absolutely no act of faith. No act of faith. Because by virtue of the fact that it happened, it becomes lahapul like Alexander the Great. I don't need proof that Alexander the Great ever existed. All other religions are based on a leap of faith. I have to believe, if I have faith, I believe that such and such happened to such and such deity. There's nobody's going to say that this is a historical fact and there were thousands of people present when such and such happened, because you can't pull a hoax of that sort. You can't walk out in the streets one day and say, you know, thousands of people were there when such and such happened, when they weren't there. They weren't there. They weren't there. See, even now people are beginning to doubt the truth of 400,000 people demonstrating in Kikar Rabin. Why not 400,000 people? Into Kikar Rabin rode the 400,000. Sheker ein lo raglaim. Let's go further in the Malvin. I feel good. I'm finally learning the Malvin with you. This was the frustration. So he says, if the Torah would not have given us in detail the life of
of Shem, the children of Shem, until Avram. Matai holid or matai made, what, when each one gave birth to the next generation, when did he die? So the one who wants to deny it would say, a person would have said, it's such a long time ago. And Moshe Rabbeinu is telling his stories of such a long time ago, nobody can question or nobody can prove it. No! It's clearly stated in Torah. Anybody with pencil and paper, I mean, I need pencil and paper for simple mathematics, but anybody else would be able to figure it out without any difficulty. Precisely the number of years, and you'll figure out that Avram saw Noah, and it's only a matter of 800 years since Noah and his three children come out of the ark. It's 700 years since all languages became established upon the face of this earth. Because if the Torah wouldn't have said it, so then we could have said that these 10 generations, you know, each one of them gave birth when he was 100 or 200 years old, and stretch out the whole thing. It didn't happen 700 years ago. That's why the Torah at length tells us Sipur Yemei Chayeim. Genealogical tables are of terrible importance. Therefore, the Torah at length tells us the days of their life, umatai holidu, when they gave birth, sheneida min amit kubatz. By taking it all together, we can know shebimei Avram, in the days of Avram, shepirsei emunat hayichud, who made known the belief in God's oneness, hayu adayin ha'edim kayamim. They were all there. People were there. They know about Avram. V'lo zot levad ki Noach ro'a et Adam ha'rishon. If you want to take it one step further, Avram sees Noach. You know what it means that Avram sees Noach? It means that Avram is able to talk to Noach about Adam ha'rishon, because Noach knew Adam. The generations are there together. I'm sure that Avram at Kiddush, after davening on Shabbos, heard not only about the Mabul, he wanted to know what did Adam look like, what kind of a man was he, what was his personality like, how did he deal with the problems of life. I mean, there was so much that Avram, in a sense, is witness to. Noah was the one who heard from Adam the truth that the world was brought into being. It didn't evolve. He found himself one day a full-grown man. There was no process of evolution. He knows it. Adam, Noah. I can imagine Adam telling Noah, Adam saying to Noah, listen, Noah, if anybody starts telling you stuff, this Darwin stuff, don't believe them. I'm telling you, I wasn't a monkey. And not only that, I wasn't even a monkey's uncle. I this is the way what I am, this is the way I came into being. Now he's coming to the answer of one of his questions. So why wasn't the Torah so clear and so specific about the sin of the generation of the tower? That's why the Torah didn't tell us at length the sin of the generation of the tower. Because that's not the intention of the story. The whole story's purpose is not to tell us that God wants people spread out on the face of this earth. He doesn't want totalitarian societies. He doesn't want big cities. That's not the purpose of the story. You know what the purpose of the story is? That it should remain for all time as absolute proof of the truthfulness of Torah. Because here we're told a story that all people started speaking different languages. And immediately afterwards we're told the precise genealogy so we can figure out how long it was from the time of the Dar HaPlaga to Moshe. And then we can realize that Moshe is getting up in front of 3 million people and he's telling them some story about a whole world speaking one language, until all of a sudden there are all sorts of other languages on the face of this earth. The whole purpose of this story is to be ultimate proof that Moshe MS, the Torah also MS, that Moshe is true and his Torah is true. Therefore, Torah didn't want to sidetrack us with the sin of the Dar HaPlaga, because that wasn't the intent of the Torah. You can go look for it. Yeah, fine. Why did God do it? Why at that particular time? But for us, what emerges from this story is proof of the truthfulness of Torah. She'ikin HaKavana, the main intent was Lahudia. She'pilug HaLishonot HaYam HaSeh Elokim. The separation into different languages was an act of God. Ubizman Koro, when it happened recently, Shvam Leot Shanal Fnei Matan Torah, 700 years before Torah was given. Shibli Sofek, Chokru V'dorshu Oz Achrat Vorma Ele. There's no question about it. There had to be some place, there had to be a blessed apocryphalist or some guy who went ahead and didn't believe. And they started looking, do we have any hieroglyphics, any writings, any matzevus going back more than 700 years in different languages? There may have been those who would have wanted to disprove Moshe. They didn't find a single letter or any stone, the shum lashon, in any other language, from before 700 years. The words of Moshe were true, and the knowledge of God spread in the land. The Seder Olam is one of the early histories that was written yet the time of by Yecheni or afterwards by the Tanoim. Seder Olam says that at the time of Peleg, in whose days all of this happened, Avram was 48 years old. In Keni, Moshe Ador HaFloga Hoyodak Tuf Nun Beishon. According to that, it was only 452 years from the time of Moshe back to the time of the languages. It means takes us one step further. According to that step in the genealogy, Avram knew all about it. He was there. Certainly remember, according to what the Nitziv said, we mentioned at the beginning of the parasha, that the great kiln, why do we have to know about the great kiln? Because the great kiln was the one into which Avram was cast. Is cast a good word? Right? Avram, yeah, you know, you cast other things in a kiln. But maybe Avram emerges, the great Avram, he emerges from that kiln. So he says he was 48. According to the Seder Olam, he was 48 years at the time. Avram Hoya Adrias, Avram is an eyewitness. Hayitachin Shiyomar Ish Dovar Kazel Zman Karov Lazev Lo Yitrash. Is it possible for somebody to say something as astonishing as this? After, in terms of history, such a brief period of time, and nobody is going to deny it? The Kuzri, Rabbi Balevi, wrote this proof as well. And we'll see that in a moment. That's why the genealogy that comes before the parasha is the genealogy of the nations of the world. The genealogy afterwards is the genealogy from Shem all the way down to Avram. The parasha is sandwiched between the two genealogies of the world and the family of Avram. So that whichever way we want to try and figure it out, we can always figure out that Moshe was not telling them something that had happened in ancient history, but something that had happened in terms of history in a relatively short period of time. That's why the Torah also tells us at length the genealogy of the nations. It was all in a close period of time. All of this is clear testimony of the truth of the words of Torah, and Moshe and his Torah is true. Second side. So that means here is a completely different look with. But what concerns the Malbim is not what was the sin of the Dor HaFloga. What concerns the Malbim is not what did they do wrong, and how does what they do wrong bring the confusion of languages that all of the other parshim deal with. But what he deals with is, why did the Torah tell us the story, and why is the Torah sandwiched in the middle of two genealogies? By the way, sandwiched in the middle of two genealogies means that it's thrust into a place where it doesn't belong. Because if you start with genealogies, why not finish the genealogies? If you start telling us these are the children of Shem, of Noah, Shem, Chom, Yafet, and you tell me all the children of really Cham and Yafet at length, and then you want to tell us the children of Shem, it should all be one straight genealogy. What's happening over here is when you look at the totality of the parasha, you find some kind of a foreign intrusion in the middle of a normal genealogical listing. And then, of course, there's a second question is, why did we need the genealogical listings altogether? Says them, the Malvin, in order to prove the truth of Torah. The tables assist us to figure out precisely the number of years. The story of the Dar HaPlugah tells us of this exceptional unusual, I don't have a word to describe it, that all people were speaking Hebrew, then all of a sudden they're speaking all sorts of other languages. And Moshe Rabbeinu was able to tell this to the Jewish people, and he gets away with it. Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, on the second side is Yehuda Ben Kuzri. I think I once told you the story. Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi lived in about the 10th, 11th century, Judaism. This is something new. May be something new to us. Judaism was under great attack from the nations of the world in those days. You know, these things don't happen that often. You know, it just happened that in the time of the Kuzri, there were assaults on the Jewish people physically and, of course, intellectually. So he wrote a sefer called Sefer HaKuzri, in which the title page says that it is a defense of the despised religion. Defense of the despised religion. And he sets it up on the basis of a legend that some centuries earlier there was a king of a people living out in the Caucasian mountains, the Kuzarim. King had a recurring dream that his intentions are good, but his deeds are not. He was a God-fearing man, but he didn't know how to serve God. So therefore he went out on an intellectual journey. He spoke to many people, and the end was that he spoke to the Jews, and he and his entire people converted to Judaism. So Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, in his great work, Kuzari, he makes up this discussion between the king and the chaver, the Talmud Chacham. So the Omar HaKuzri says the king, how many years do you count now from creation? You count from creation. By the way, if you want to know when the Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi wrote the Kuzri, you have it right here. He says it's 4,500 years. And if you want to know precisely how we get to 4,500 in his time, 4,500, how many years ago was that? 1,200 years ago, something like that. Okay. Go through Torah and you'll figure out from Adam, Shays, Enos, Noah, through all of them. Achare came at Shem Ve'eva, afterwards to Shem Ve'eva, Umehem at Avram, Vacha came from Yitzchak, Yaakov at Moshe, Ishim Elu, Hoyu Lefi Seder Yachasam. Next line over there, Hanim Shach Lelai of Steak. This is, we have an uninterrupted genealogy of all the generations. Kikarin Hapril Adam, the Chizgulato. Those generations were like the heart of a fruit of Adam and his treasure. Now, what he's explaining over here is when we have all of these people who lived many years, it does not mean that all people lived that long in those days. But there were people in this genealogy who had the genes of Adam. And the ones who had the genes of Adam lived long. Others may have lived the normal number of years that are allotted to men on the face of this earth. No, it seems that his genes, according to Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, went to Shays, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Yored, Chanoch, Mesuv Shelach. Did I skip a few generations? I mean, this is one of the approaches. In other words, the approach of Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is that the unique divine genes of Adam went only to select people. We're not talking about the fact that all people after Adam have eyes and feet and hands, you know, but there was a unique divine gene that passed from one generation to the next, and those were the unique people who lived that long. Every one of them also had other children, children who did not carry the divine gene. They were like the peel around the fruit. And they were not like their fathers. They were not like their fathers, so that the divine idea should spark them. The genealogy goes according to the divine people. These were individuals. Low kibbutzim, they were not groups. Until Yaakov gave birth to 12 shotim, shekulam hayu ruyim linyan elokim. All of them had this great spark of divinity. That's when God joined with a group of people. We count according to them. We count the number of years of the early generations, as was given to us in the Torah of Moshe. We know what happened from Moshe until today. This is, of course, going to develop later into what I said was the historic approach to Judaism. According to Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, he needs no proofs of revelation at Mount Sinai. The fact that we talk about it, the fact that it has remained a tradition by the Jewish people for 3,500 years, speaks louder than any other proof. There are facts of history that do not require any kind of proof. That's it. It happened. And as I said, that was the difference between other religions and Judaism. No other religion ever claimed that there were, I don't know, thousands of people present, say at the resurrection of Yeshua. Nobody says that there were 1,000 or 100 or 10 people there. It's an act or a leap of faith upon the Christian to believe that. We don't call for an act of faith, the Kuzri says. It's a historic fact. And by virtue of the fact that it has been transmitted that way, it could only have been done only because it was it indeed happened. Says the king, Peirut Kazer, he agrees with the Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, Peirut Kazer, this detail, the genealogical details, Marchik Min HaLev Et HaSafek Hara, it removes from the heart bad doubts. Pen Yesh Bazer Kozovo Knunya. The fact that the Torah clearly gives us the genealogy is something that makes us feel a little bit more confident that there is no lie or trick over here. Dor Asher Kazer Lo Yitachein Ki Yaskinu Alav Afilu Asara Anashim. If it's a lie, let's take for a moment that it's all a hoax. For a moment, only for a moment. Moshe is a hoax, Torah is a hoax, Chas V'Shalom, you know, all a hoax. But 3,500 years later, we believe it. And we believe it not because of an individual, but we say hundreds of thousands of billions of people were there. So he says, this kind of a lie, it's impossible that even 10 people should agree to it, without them becoming confused, and they're going to reveal, whether they like it or not, it will become revealed, the secret of the trick that took place of it. You can't fool so many people for so long. When you come with this number to most people, that you know it's only 4,500 years since the creation of the world, they're already, they have their dander up. They want to knock you down. Alachat kama v'kama. Certainly, lo yaskimu, lo yitachen ki yaskimu al hamon. Certainly, you can't expect that masses, millions of people are going to say this. If some professor is going to say it at a lecture, he will be attacked from all sides. How are 3 million intelligent people going to accept it? Beichud shehamin shal kama denu karov lumarot, and especially when you're telling us about a number of years that is relatively close in history. You can't lie or make up something of this sort. Says the Chaver, Talmud Chacham, Amnon Kenu, it is so. Avram Atzmo, Haya Ben Dor HaPlaga. Avram himself was in the Dor HaPlaga. By the way, the correct Hebrew is not Dor HaPlaga,
or Dar HaPlaga. But what can I do? From the time I was a little child, my Rebbe talked about the Dar HaPluga. I can't do it. But when I read it, it's really the Dar HaPlaga. And if if I would start speaking about the Dar HaPlaga, you understand, my guys and children would start laughing, you'd hear the laughter all the way to Ramot. But that's the way it is. It was the Yiddish, sort of the way we learned in Chaydeg, not about the Dar HaPlaga, but it was the Dar HaPlaga. We always enjoy, I'm thinking of our Ruth Shana, Talpanu. I would have thought that the word should be Talpanu, you understand? Talpanu, because a pay in the middle of a word has a dot in it, you understand? The fay becomes a pay. And sometimes it becomes a little very funny when you have it. It's the Dor HaPlaga. So he says, Avraham himself wasn't the Dor HaPlaga. Ulam hu, krov avino. He and those who were close to him. Shomer Aloshen, Eber Sabo. He was the one, those who were close to him, they're the ones who kept the Hebrew of his Zayda. Asher al kein nivra b'shem Ivri. That's why Avraham is called the next week Zebi's Avraham ha-Ivri. Why do they call him the Ivri? The he? Because he's the only one who's still speaking Hebrew. Everybody else is already, moderna. They're talking all sorts of other languages. Ugaritic, Akkadian, understand? But real live languages they're talking. And he's still talking the Alta Mamalushin or the Alta Tatalushin of his Zayda. And when Moshe comes 400 years later, man had already achieved the knowledge of heaven and earth. In that generation, Moshe appears before Paro and the wise men of Egypt. Who believed him? It was not until they had checked and they had studied and they had asked. What was it that they couldn't believe about Moshe? They couldn't believe about Moshe that man God communicates with man. And they continued to doubt that until Sinai, when they were witness to God communicating with Moshe. Va'amdu b'sfei comes there, and they continued in this doubt. Ad asher hishmi'om alokaz devarov aseret hadibrot, until God let them hear the words. They themselves achieved the level of prophecy when they heard the Ten Commandments from God. Kach nohagu bo b'nei amo. This is the way the people of his nation conducted themselves with him. Certainly other people were not going to listen to Moshe. And he's going to get away with his Dor HaPlaga story. And here comes a very beautiful, one of the great sentences of the Rav Yehuda Halevi, the Kuzri. The only thing is, this is a new translation, and I always learned it with the old translation. I love this. It says, his people didn't believe him. They questioned and they doubted Moshe, lo mitoch sichlutam, not because of their foolishness, elo mitoch chochmatam, because of their wisdom. We're not a gullible people. Man can't come walking out of the desert and says, the Lord of hosts spake unto me so saying, old Pharaoh, let my people go. And all of a sudden, what are you talking about? Jews are going to believe? Oh no, we're not a gullible people. We want to be certain. We want to know that it's true that God communicates with men and that God communicated with you. So there are doubting people, and their doubts are blessed. Despite that, they're going to accept his whole story about the Dor HaPlaga, the languages. Only because of one reason. Because there they know. They know. Without Moshe telling them, they know that Moshe Emes, the Kodosu Emes. This is the way his people dealt with him, not because of their foolishness, because of wisdom. They're afraid his signs and his miracles, the mumbo jumbo Houdini stuff that he does not impress them. Who knows, sleight of hand. So he turns sticks into snakes. So what? And he turns snakes back into sticks. That doesn't impress him. It is a measure of the maturity and the intelligence of the Jewish people that they doubt him.
And because they were afraid maybe it was itztakninut, astrology, or amanut domala, or some kind of talent. Ashalo tamod no b'fnei habechina. Ki hein kemat be'a mezuyach, because that's a forged coin. And therefore, ultimately what he was going to say, and that's why, in the next, just a few lines, and we'll close. The second sentence on the next column, how is it possible to consider that people like this, how would they accept this story that Moshe told them? It was only one language 500 years ago. And that all sorts of nations are related to one another. Well, how can they believe this? You know how they believe it? There's only one way. Because it's the absolute truth. And they knew it even before he told it to them. Because they're all related. Avram saw Noah. Noah spoke to Adam. Avram was there when the languages were changed. It all happened within a span of time that turned it into historical fact. Moshe Emet, the Torah HaEmet. So this is the approach of the Malbim and Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi to this whole story, and what we gain from it is, why doesn't the Torah indeed tell us what their sin was? And the second, why is it sandwiched between the two genealogical tables that naturally one would flow from the other? It's not an interruption, it's not a break. The purpose of the story of the Dor HaFloga and both genealogical tables is to prove the truthfulness of Torah. That's it. Huh?